This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz. We're streaming and podcasting at KUSP.org. The bandwidth for GeekSpeak.org is provided by GNI, GNIHosting.com. It is Saturday, February 13, 2010, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Today on GeekSpeak, the geek news. That's right. In the second half, your questions and comments about technology. Welcome to GeekSpeak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during GeekSpeak are not necessarily those of KUSP. It's a love-hate relationship. Love your cars, hate it when they break. You'll love the car guys and hate to miss them when Click and Clack give their advice on all things automotive every Saturday here on KUSP at 11 a.m. That's right after this show, this wonderful program called GeekSpeak. GeekSpeak on KUSP is supported by Whole Foods Market, offering Whole Foods Whole Trade Roses this Valentine's Day. The roses are ethically grown with care given to both the workers and the environment. Whole Foods Market in Santa Cruz, Capitola, and in Monterey in the Del Mar Shopping Center. Del Monte Shopping Center. My name's Lyle Troxell. The geeks today with me are Al Luckow. He's a new media architect. Good morning, Al.
Morning. Hello, everybody.
We have Alex Slias, our Southern California application security analyst correspondent.
Good morning, Lyle.
Good morning, Alex. And we have Lindsay Lonnie, applications engineer. Good morning, Lindsay.
Good morning, geeks.
We are going to start out the show today with a little bit of Valentine-y kind of stuff. I wish I had the music. I don't.
It'd be Al. Neat. I don't even know what you use for
Valentine's music?
Like Geek love story or something.
Well, you know, we do have a nice song, though. We could like play, you know, our theme song again. Yeah, by the way, the theme song today was by Michael Newman of Pet Star Music. Thanks, Michael.
Well,
if you'd like to participate, I'm going to interrupt you some more. Okay. If you'd like to participate in the show, you can make a theme song, you can make an image of the day. Listen to the show news as we talk about the news, like Al's about to tell us an amazing thing. And if you can think of some imagery for that and you have something like Photoshop, make an image for us, 400 pixel by 400 pixel. We'll use it for the show art for today's episode on geekspeak.org. Go ahead.
What?
Oh, Valentine's and kind of geeky stuff.
There's a website out there since it's, you know, Valentine's Day tomorrow. And I thought I'd bring this up. It's called Geek to Geek. And the headline on it is Find Your Geek Match. This is the best place on the net to meet geeks. So, you know, since it's Valentine's Day and maybe people are
Is that self-proclaimed?
Well, yeah, but I mean, where else are you going to go, you know?
That's true.
So they say on their site, maybe you're into Star Wars or Star Trek or role-playing games or anime or manga, science fiction, comics, Harry Potter, Renaissance fairs, or board games or puzzles. Whatever your geek type interests, there are thousands of people on Geek to Geek who share them with you. So it's it looks like it's free to join.
It's a little bit of love.
Then there's probably some fee somewhere along the line. I haven't, you know, gone in there because, you know. But
if you start doing things that are too geeky, you get charged for it.
Yeah, I guess. But it's, you know, I mean, it's kind of a neat idea, you know, special interest. Sure. And we're Geek Speak, and this is Geek to Geek. And if you're
all right, good. Know. We have some more special interest kind of geeky stuff. We're talking about Avatar in a little bit. Yeah. So, and also, we're also going to be talking in just a minute about Gmail and Iran. But first, Alex, what's up with botnets?
Botnets.
What is a botnet?
A botnet. Basically, botnet is a whole lot of computers that are used for some particular function. They kind of all work together. Spam is one of the bigger uses for botnets. Our own computers end up getting infected, and I say our, hopefully none of ours, as in those of us in the room. But a lot of people's computers get infected with viruses, and a lot of times what those viruses do is infect the computer and add it as one of the nodes on a botnet of thousands or millions of computers.
But there actually are no robots involved. That you know of?
Not physical robots.
Okay.
Well, if you have a robot being something that moves mechanically, or it moves in some form.
Yeah, botnet sounds
produces kinetic energy.
Botnet to me sounds like a lot of robots.
Right. Well, it is kind of like that, though. I mean, and all of them have CD trays, and CDs can be ejected and pulled back in. So that is physical modification.
There's some level of robotness to this.
A computer can kind of be called a robot.
I know.
I like it already.
You already look a little nervous there.
But, I mean, the real deal with this is that those things are actually very valuable. Having 5,000 computers at your fingertips to send out spam or to do other things is actually something that you can sell, something you can use to make money.
And a lot of, especially in Russia, it's very common for organized crime there to use these botnets. And in fact, there are rival botnet groups and organizations and, you know, criminal organizations as well. And one of the things of today, you know, that I want to mention today is that we've got a botnet called the SpyEye Toolkit, or it's actually malware that goes out and infects computers like any other malware that would be used for botnet purposes. But this particular one attacks its rival botnets. There's another botnet called Zeus. It's, you know, one of the common names for it. And it goes out, tries to find it in any computer that that the SpyEye toolkit infects, and looks for Zeus, removes Zeus from the system so that it's now the dominant, you know, node on that computer. It starts taking over.
Yeah.
So they're having like a civil war, like the botnets are fighting the botnets.
Yep.
That sounds really cool.
Is that then new botnet? Is that new piece of software that's taken over? It's going to do the bad things anyway.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
It's not like beneficial to you.
It's nothing good for us.
It's not like iron antivirus spreading or something.
Right.
I'm curious. We should call Don back in here. I wonder if this happens in biology. Are there viruses that take over a cell and the other virus comes in and fights as well? Does that happen in biology as well? It's a really interesting kind of idea. Hmm. I would assume that it wouldn't be very beneficial to either organism to have to be fighting each other. But in this situation...
Well,
if
it is for the one who wins.
If there's a back door, yeah, I mean, I guess if you're taking over the computer and you can clean it perfectly, what the heck? So why don't they just sell the product that then gets rid of the viruses? I guess it's more profitable, too.
Well, they're looking, I mean, they're not there to sell products that, you know, out. They're out there.
To send spam.
Exactly. They make a lot more money off of spam and various other activities like that.
All right. As I said, we're about to talk about Avatar news, so if you're curious about the movie Avatar and want to know about some of the side effects culturally, stay tuned with us. And I'll just in a second. But first, what's going on in Iran?
So it looks like the Iranian government has blocked Gmail recently. Fox News reported that the government shut down access to Gmail within Iran. Hmm. They advised citizens that it's going to be replacing Gmail with a national email service.
But they didn't start that first.
No.
That's a problem. Hmm. And what about people's email not getting to them anymore? I mean, that would kind of tick me off.
That's been happening. Yeah. There's been outages.
Why Gmail specifically? I mean, is Google also filtered on Iran? Do you know?
Anybody? Basically, what it looks like, and nobody knows for sure, but... The Buzz service that Google released, the social networking, it looks like the government is afraid of people gathering with social networking tools to band together protest the government.
Oh, so Gmail has new social features, therefore they want to take it out.
Exactly.
But, I mean, Gmail's always had chat, and that's pretty much a social feature. This new thing, what is it called, Buzz?
Yeah.
I started trying to use it, but it's still not showing up in my navigation. Anybody used it yet?
No, I haven't used it.
Nope. It's kind of like a Twitter, Facebook kind of sharing thing, but through your Gmail interface. So it shows up kind of an inbox on your left-hand
because
side.
Because we don't possibly have enough of these.
No,
now.
No.
We need to have many more confusing.
You think that, yeah. I mean, there's Facebook and Twitter and Friendster and...
There are things that Google isn't doing, so they have to start doing those
and things that Google... Yeah. Well, and eventually Google will do everything.
Yes.
And then we won't have to worry about it. Well, we were just talking about how they took over Etherpad, and we're wondering if Etherpad's going to go away, because we use Etherpad all the time. Etherpad.com. In fact, you can join our conversation right now if you'd like by going to geekspeak.org, and on the left-hand side of the show pages is a little link to our chat section. But that's Google-owned, and it's not off yet, thank God, but who knows when it will be.
Regarding the timing on that, they're saying that the 31st anniversary of the Islamic Revolution is coming up, so they're expecting people to start.
Oh, so they're giving warning.
Well, that's why the timing, not just that Buzz came out. But
okay,
yeah.
But so do you know if they already turned it off, or if they say they're going to turn it off, move your email?
They're already starting to turn it off. They're giving people warnings right now. They're going. Okay. They're pulling people's satellites off the roofs, confiscating phones, all kinds of fun stuff. Mm.
All for Gmail?
Yeah.
Wow, that sounds more like they're just pulling the internet.
Yeah. Well, maybe people are only complaining about Gmail.
Right.
Yeah, no, it's always been kind of bad in the sense that for, you know, individual freedoms. But I wonder why. I mean, we won't get more into that because I'm not a political person. Let's move on to the next news story. for weeks now, we've been trying to talk about Avatar, and I just keep on not doing it.
Yeah, well, you know.
So next week, maybe we will. All right, moving on to Alex. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, it's like I propose these stories, and I don't know if Lyle likes them or just ignoring me or what. But there's a website called Learn Na'vi, which Na'vi is the language of the creatures,
Na'vi people,
the aliens in Avatar, and that's spelled N-A hyphen V-I. Or N-A
and Learn Na'vi apostrophe V-I. LearnNavi.org. But it'll be up on the Geekspeak website.
Yeah, and you know, the
is
guy...
Clear? Can I geekly correct you a little bit?
Sure.
They're not aliens.
Well, no, they are not the aliens. We would be the aliens on that planet, yes. Okay.
And the whole movie takes place on that planet. So.
Right, so the ones who are not aliens speak this language.
The Na'vi.
The Na'vi. And the language is actually developed by a professor of linguistics. So it's the guy's name was Paul Frommer. He's a professor at USC with a doctorate in linguistics. Linguistics. I can't even. I'm
not
a linguist.
Linguistics.
Anyway, he developed this language. It's similar to, you know, the kind of thing that where people are speaking Klingon. There are words that represent things, and you can put them together to form sentences. And he did come up with this language for the movie, but people are like...
Isn't it kind of like, das refrigerator? Like, there's some words that don't work, right?
Well, you know, the person who put this website together, I think it's in Australia, actually. Well, who cares what the website is?
Yeah.
It's a website.
It's international.
And they find out that the people are, you know, he put this up thinking, yeah, there's actually words for this, and I got them all together, and I made this website. 20,000 members. Boom!
You and know, they're learning Na'vi.
They're all learning Na'vi. They all want to do this kind of thing. They're
now,
all
learning Klingon is one thing. I mean, that I can understand. But Na'vi? I mean, come on.
Well,
it's not
they've
even
got,
a year old yet.
They've got things in an activist survival guide on here, James Cameron's art book of Avatar. They've got a few things on there, but also you can go in and learn the grammar, the vocabulary, phonetics. There's downloads.
So it sounds like they had this language defined prior before the movie, and then whenever the characters were speaking that language, they actually were speaking a language. Sounds like.
Yes. Yeah. And there's actually, on this site, there's a link to a Na'vi, Learn Na'vi wiki. So there's a, you know, sort of a Wikipedia thing set up to, you know, go in and learn all the things about this. And then there's sort of an aside to this. I mean, Na'vi, you know, the whole movie was, everybody's seen this, said, oh, it's a great movie, and blah, 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 you know. Well, apparently the Chinese really liked the movie as well.
The government. Specifically.
The government, yeah. Because what happened is they decided that they might rename a mountain. They might rename a mountain Avatar in honor of the film. There was a mountain that was used, you know, sort of for inspiration for some of the mountain scenes.
Uh-huh.
And they've decided that, well, you know, we just had any old name.
Is it a mountain that partially floats? Giant
yes,
rocks it's,
and if you look at the actual pictures of the mountains, they're
similar to the movie.
They kind of look like it. They're not actually floating, but there are a lot of blue people walking around on it
and dragons.
So I can understand the similarity. But it says the southern sky column in Zhangjiajie, Hunan province, will
you're
now
not
be known
linguist,
as
are you?
No,
you need to take class.
Will now be known as Avatar Hallelujah Mountain. And this is from the BBC, so apparently.
It's not.
It
sounds like an onion story.
Yeah,
you know,
it's not. It's so I don't know. Like, people are really into Avatar.
Yeah, you know the. Actually, I was hearing in Korea that it's been making a huge splash, no pun intended, because they are now doing what's 4D. You know what they're calling 4D, which is basically in the theaters they have water sprinkling, so they're kind of giving the more physical effect, and they're going nuts over it in Korea.
So whenever they deal with water scenes, they spray the audience down.
Yeah, or you know they probably have other, you know, similar things. I know like Disneyland or in, you know, other theme parks do similar things with their 3D environments.
Right. So when the explosions happen, fire burns the audience.
Yeah,
and you get ash covering you. Yeah, that's great.
I prefer not to get sprayed while I'm watching a movie.
Oh, look, a character's been stabbed by a spear. Ah! Oh, the audience. How interactive do you want to be? Interesting. Did you guys see it in 3D? Anybody see it in 3D?
I have not seen it yet.
Yeah. You saw it in 3D?
Oh, it was awesome, yeah. And I kept the glasses. I think you're supposed to give them back.
This is public radio.
They're cool.
People know.
I know, but you know what? These are cool glasses, and they're 3D glasses.
I
haven't figured out exactly
those.
How they work yet.
I was wondering why you're wearing those. You know, it doesn't enhance normal life.
It makes everything 2D when you wear them and you're not watching. Everybody looks like Egyptians, you know, walking around in those hieroglyphics. Two eyes on one side of the head.
I tried to go see it, and the theater was full, and they had, we actually had the glasses. Really? And we kind of forgot to return them. So yeah. I have not seen the movie, but I have the glasses.
Well, they don't say you can't keep them. They say you should recycle them.
So why do you guys hate the planet?
Huh?
Why do you hate the planet? You would have returned them and let other people use them. Instead, you took them.
Well, because I have to figure out if I can do something with these glasses. Like, I'm sure there's something I can do on the computer that I can give this same effect. So
we're doing part of reduce, reuse, recycle.
Yeah, I'm still using them, actually.
All the time.
I mean, you pay for them. It's expensive to see Avatar. It's not just a normal cost for a movie if you go see the 3D version.
Right.
Shockingly expensive.
Yeah. So I figure that must be what I paid for.
Must be. And we're going to be talking a little bit about PowerAssure in a minute, data center power management. We're going to be talking a bit about the mystery of Windermere Street, a strange street in England.
Did you say PowerAssure?
I think so. Yeah.
That's a very odd coincidence.
Really?
Yes.
Well, first, let's talk about Apache.
Ah, Apache. All right.
What odd coincidence is in a minute.
apparently, Apache 1.x is going to be no more.
So sad. I knew it well.
Even though there's been 2.0, 2.2.
And we're not talking about native American tribes.
Apache
is the web server. When you visit some place online with your browser of choice and you ask for your Gmail, for example,
mm-hmm.
maybe not. Actually, Google probably isn't actually.
Actually, no, they don't. They have their own custom one, which I recently read is 13% of all recently updated websites is running on the Google web server.
I haven't even known about it. Okay, but the web server, basically, you have a browser, Internet Explorer, Firefox, Chrome, Safari, Opera. Don't use Internet Explorer, by the way. And that's your side. And then the other side, something else is talking to those browsers. And that's the thing we're talking about is a web server. Apache is the web server. Like, everybody uses it. The Geekspeak website uses it, in fact. But we use Apache, too. And what you're talking about is Apache 1, the kind of first, is no more. It's not going to be supported anymore.
Yeah, and I mean, and the thing is, it's not like it's just some old version that nobody uses. A lot of people never made the upgrade to 2.0, and I think it's 2.2 is the current line. And the reason being that it's always been rock solid. It has a very good security record in terms of flaws that were found, and it's been really rock solid. It runs, it works, and people were happy with it. But they're no longer going to be releasing any more patches to fix bugs and security updates and all that. So
it means it's basically you can't use it anymore.
It's pretty much going making its way on.
I know websites that are using it though. I mean, it's definitely being used still.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. No, I'd say a large chunk of websites still run version 1.3 point something.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's kind of sad news because I used to know Apache very well, but I've been on Apache 2 for a long time and it definitely has more features. So.
Yeah.
It's not that big a deal. All right, what's this mystery? Is it your turn?
No, somebody...
It's not your turn.
Somebody had mentioned PowerAssured.
Okay, let's talk about that. Yeah. All Lindsay, right. PowerAssured.
Okay. Xerox Park is working with a startup called PowerAssure to save data center power. So they have a project going on that's aimed at moving data centers from being always on to always available by virtualizing the power consumption.
Mm-hmm.
They're saying data centers in the U.S. are supposed to be eating through 100 billion kilowatts a year by next year, and that's only with server utilization at around 10 to 15%.
Okay.
So the data centers are going to be treated as a single pool of resources, like CPU core, memory, I/O, network capacity, and they can dynamically allocate and use these
more
resources.
Cores. Okay. Exactly. So the way it's kind of happening right now in a traditional data center, you have 100 machines in there in a couple racks, right? You have them all on, all working, and one of them is at some capacity, or a few of them are at some capacity, or it's shared across and all of them are at some capacity. But in reality, if you could turn off half of them and have the other ones up at 100% or 58% of capacity, you have a lot better power usage.
And you're talking about a lot of power.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I had a friend that has been on the show before and stuff contact me from Florida Segment Data Center, and the kilowatt power, the power in the facility was unbelievable. I could not believe that that much power is being used.
Data centers use huge amounts of power.
Yeah.
And the one thing that I wanted to mention about this PowerAssured thing.
Uh-huh.
Do you remember you were at my studio?
That was PowerAssured.
he was at my studio a couple weeks ago, and
Al's designing the box for them.
I'm designing the bezel for PowerAssure, and I did some totally wild for a server rack.
Look at the flames.
Yeah, I did this crazy design that has never been done before on a server rack. The thing looks like a hot rod component.
You know what happened? Somebody saw that, thought it was so cool. They wrote an article, and Lindsay picked up on the article. It's all because of you.
And my whole idea of doing it that way was because... blade switches and things like that, they're just really boring looking, and everybody does the exact same thing. So I did this dome label with chrome on it and flames and this crazy design, and it just really looks, you know, hot. Actually, I could give this to post,
Geekspeak. Let's get up on the site. You got to see Al's designs. It's a lot of fun.
You know, and it's just coincidence you happen to bring up this company because my whole point was
When you said PowerAssure, that's interesting. I was like, what is he going to talk about? I didn't realize it was the company that we've been chatting about.
Yep.
I even helped you with part of that.
Have a custom way of doing different kinds of vent holes for it so that you can actually customize the cut metal within the vent.
I get a lot of pleasure out of knowing what you do, Al. The idea that, like, one week you're like, well, how do you make sure that the vent holes for a server rack, a one-use server rack, has good enough airflow? And then the next day you're like, look at these cool pictures of mushrooms. Yeah. I'm like, what?
You actually punched the holes because I couldn't get a hole in the right place for these metal vents, and he actually brought it to work and punched the holes for me.
I drilled it out for you.
So I'll add that to the Geekspeak. I'll just link to my client page.
It used to be blue lights on servers was all the really cool thing, all your rows of blue lights in your racks. Now it's going to be the hot rod flames.
and bevel, like it has a puffy bevel. So they're going to be saving a lot of money, though?
Basically, what they're promising is...
And there's no money being passed hands here, right? Yeah, Al doesn't make any money from this or anything.
Hey,
so.
No. But we were talking about... Right. They were the ones using the PlayStations or...
Oh, yeah. A lot of people use them. Not PlayStations. What's the one that's always being used for supercomputers? Game console. Is it PlayStation?
Is it the PlayStation or Xbox or something?
I think it was the PlayStation
used for that. Yeah, used a lot of parallel processing. Yeah.
So they're promising 57% reduction in energy costs in 3 months.
Wow.
But they take 30% of the profit.
Nice. 30% of the savings. That's their cut, huh? They
say,
we'll save you this much and we get 30%. That's not bad. Especially if you got the gear in there. And you got a pretty bevel.
Exactly.
So what more do you need in life, really? All right, Al, it is your turn now.
It is.
So this mystery thing, I saw this BBC special or something about it. Describe what's going on.
This is kind of interesting. It's a place. It's called the Mystery of Windsor. Is it Windsor? Or Windmere Street, where gadgets go haywire. And there's this spot in England and this corner where whenever people park there, their car security key fob things don't work. None of them work. You know, just in this whole block
area. You can't get in your car?
You can't. People would, and they have this video that I've, you know, posted a link for. And you can watch the people. They can't get their key fobs to work.
They have to keep trying, and finally it works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just one area. And, of course, there's, like, a funeral home there, and people are saying, it's the ghost. It's Henry the ghost. He's been around here. You know, and there's all these, like, things. And
I'm always amazed this kind of stuff doesn't happen more often.
Because
you have weird spaces. RF, radio frequency stuff, is affected by everything. Everyone has had the experience at one point about having a portable phone and a microwave and Wi-Fi, and different combinations of that cause the microwave to burn. Well, that's not really what happens, but the phone doesn't work, or the Wi-Fi doesn't work. And so that kind of interference stuff happens all the time. I'd expect it with all these cars, fobs, to be a problem at some point.
I still can't believe my garage door opener only works with my garage door, because...
You try it all the time?
All these frequencies, you know, some reason, you know, they have a way of doing this. And having these key fobs go out, one guy was saying that was interviewed on the street, he said, it's funny, all our key fobs started working when they put this new light signal in, you know.
Yeah.
And so there's always like some
so you think that it's something like that.
And then the government's saying, it's definitely no interference from our light signals. And they're like, it started happening right after you put those in. It does, can't possibly be happening, you know, and yet there it is. And you can watch the little video, and it's another thing I found on BBC News. So it's really happening.
Yeah, I saw the story, and it does look like it's happening. And, of course, it's very likely that there's some major interference that's happening there. So if you you can do this all the time. If you have a spark generator, something that just produces a lot of sparks, like a little Jacob's ladder climbing thing, like in Frankenstein's laboratory, that causes so much raw interference that would mess up Bluetooth, for example. So if I had a spark generator right here.
Really?
Yeah, Bluetooth wouldn't work. You're decimating this. You're making the noise floor so high that it's hard to pick the signal out of it.
But I don't have a spark generator in my car, and my Bluetooth messes up all the time.
Well, maybe you drive by spark generators. Besides, you don't. You know, you're friends with me. You might have one. You don't know.
Yeah, you could have one in your pocket. Yeah, I wouldn't know.
I like Waz. Waz could do that to you. Totally.
Yeah.
Doesn't he have like a TV turner offer?
Well, he has that. And remember, his watch was actually tubes.
Yes.
He had tubes
in his watch.
In his watch.
Not the internet tubes.
No.
We're talking about classic valves for those British folks.
Vacuum
out there.
Tubes.
That's right.
In his watch.
And hey, we were just talking about power consumption and such. And so Sean Treo, who we had on the show a while ago, was just talking about a facility that he is working on in Georgia, and it is using a data center. It's accommodating 500 to 1,000 watts per square foot. So that's how much power consumption. Now, maybe that doesn't mean a lot to you, but they've got 4,000 square feet, and they're gonna have another 3,000 coming, and the facility can actually handle that. That's kind of square footage and that kind of power consumption. 1,000 watts per square foot. That's a lot of energy to be using.
Yeah.
Like it's kind of like taking 1,000-watt light bulbs, right, and filling the space with them, and then also being able to take care of the heat that gets generated by that. I mean, it's pretty impressive.
Yeah. Yeah.
If anyone's had a 1,000-watt light bulb and tried to, like, touch it, you can't.
Right.
And then just put those, one in a giant grid. That would be a lot of heat to take care of.
Yeah.
And that's the facility's waste. Now, of course, what PowerSure that Lindsay were talking about, they basically would turn off most light bulbs because it's already bright enough in the room, and it would be helpful. Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Sean Treo, for the information. And by the way, I don't think it's anything mystical with that street.
It's probably some sort of, it's probably, being in England, old England like that, it's probably a mad scientist in
right.
one of the buildings,
with a spark
building like a human from, it's probably something like that.
Yeah. Let's right. hope so.
Yeah, one of those big lightning Van de Graaff generators.
It's some pub proprietor trying to attract tourists.
Yeah.
The pub that says, ghosts here, have a drink.
Right.
That's the guy.
Yeah.
None of your electronics will work here.
A real vacation?
All right. Geek Speak is supported by Henry J. Ramirez, DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in cosmetic and family dentistry using digital technology for less radiation, offering one appointment crowns and veneers. For appointments and more information, 423-2447 or online at RamirezDDS.com. Al, we're not doing a podcast today, but you mentioned an iPhone app.
Yeah. There's an iPhone app. You want the location one?
Sure.
There's one that is kind of handy to have. It's called Friend Finder.
It used to be called Amigo Mapper.
It used to be called Amigo Mapper.
Which I thought kind of
like. Which I like that name too. But
this is a Valentine's special.
Yes.
Because if you and your spouse have an iPhone, you can both get this app and
you could be friends.
You can know where each other are.
Yeah.
Is that the right phrase?
So this is a kind of a neat app because it's free. That's a really great thing
is?
About it.
Oh, I'm getting
yeah.
it. Yeah.
And what it does is when you add the other person who has the app in your
friend,
then you can at any point open up the application and see where they are.
Or more correctly, see where they last had the application running, the location
right.
of that.
Well, or
so if you turn it off, the dot stays still.
Right. Or if you both have the application running, it shows you a live view.
Right.
So what I did when I was coming, when I would leave Apple to come home and and the traffic was questionable, I would turn Amigo Mapper on and my wife would have it on at home and she would just be able to tell where I was and about what time I get home based on where she saw me in traffic, usually on 17
cool.
sitting there.
So you wouldn't have to be texting back and forth.
I wouldn't have to be,
rules,
it's just like, right, exactly. I didn't have
right.
to, like, make calls. She could just, anytime she wanted to see, wonder where he is now, she could just check, And
you could also, if you had, an online dating service, the online dating service, you could both be friends for this and then to a mall
if you were
and try
both
to find
geeks,
each other just by the dots.
You would both have this no
yeah.
matter what.
Yeah.
But for free, I mean, this is great. It's
cool.
It's done by a company called Wink Pass
mm-hmm.
and just located right here in Santa Cruz.
Would you add the URL to the...
Yes.
Site. Thank
yes.
you very much. GeekSpeak on KOSP is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. We are taking your calls with questions and comments about technology. You can ask us anything you'd like. That's right, anything you'd like about technology. You want to know more about spark generators? Call. You want to know more about anything? Call. We can talk about pencils. Pencils is always the example I have about technology. It's kind of like something you don't think is technology, but it really is. So ask us about pencils you like. The phone numbers are 476-2800, 476-2800, or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Again, 1-800-655-5877. You know, the thing is, when I do that, now I really do want to talk about pencils. Maybe we should.
Material science right there.
That's right. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP. This is Geek Speak. You can learn about all the stories we cover and all the things we mention up on geekspeak.org. And please feel free to do so. If you'd like to participate and be creative with us, you can always give us story ideas. Al likes things about robots, I think.
And of course, images. And that app was Friend Mapper.
Friend Mapper.
I guess I kept thinking Friend Finder. No, it's
Friend Mapper.
Head.
Well, no, Friend Mapper's good.
Friend
it's so
Mapper,
funny because we
yeah.
said Amiga Mapper.
Right.
And then you said they changed
sorry
to Friend.
Sorry about that. Yeah.
Okay,
correction.
Friend Mapper.
Friend Mapper. But once you go to the website that we have
the
linked there,
website.
You'll see it there.
And today is February 13th.
Yeah.
So just go to the February 13th, 2010
yeah.
show and you'll find it. No deal. We have calls coming in. But while we have calls coming in, Rick's going to put them on. Let's just really quickly talk about pencils. Do you use pencils for drawing or do you mostly use charcoal and things?
When I go to Life Drawing, I always use a Conte, you know, crayon type thing or mm-hmm. a pastel or something like that. I'm always using a big chalk because I use big sheets of paper and pencils, you know.
Okay. But do you have a fondness for pencils like me?
Yeah. I love pencils. I mean, as a matter of fact, there's websites for people who are like completely crazy about pencils.
Yes.
You know, I mean,
I'm not that crazy about them, but I do
about
like
the way you
collection.
Sharpen them. There's all these different techniques for sharpening. You know,
I just take them and grind them on pavement. Is that the right way to do it?
That's one way.
Yeah,
that's usually. but
that's the knife method. I mean, I know a lot of people who take a knife and they sharpen their pencil
yes.
with a knife.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a lot of waste, unfortunately. But
yeah. but there's special techniques for.
Oh, maybe you know how to do. If you know how to do it, it's not wasted.
Yeah, it shaves it a certain way. I think about 6 months ago, I talked about a pencil sharpener on Halloween that was like this crazy. Head and
yes, you jam it in somebody's eye.
Yeah,
yeah, and that's actually the preferred way. That's most people.
Yeah,
do.
It was kind of gross, but
well, and like even with a knife, I know people that will sharpen it when they're drawing because they sharpen it to try and get a flat edge
right.
on
yes.
one side.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And
yeah.
now, I mean, I see there's a lot of pencils that actually
tip.
Come that way, but
and that's you know most people that do construction, mm-hmm. blanking carpenters will take you know a wide pencil so the lead stays. Strong because it's wide, but the line is real thin, so you mm-hmm. get kind of a wedge kind of shape.
Yeah.
If you're a pencil chewer, do they make flavored ones?
You know, they do. They have to, right?
They do. You know,
are
actually,
you a pencil chewer?
No.
Okay.
They do make scented pencils.
But if they made flavored ones, I would be.
You would chew them. That's why people don't make scented.
Just getting out of the pencil rehabilitation
no,
center.
Oh yes. I think we're going to stop talking about them. Yeah. Well, let's go ahead and stop talking about it. Let's talk about something a little sadder, a little depressing, and kind of bounces off the joy of Valentine's with a little bit of sad news. Alex?
All right. I hate to be the bringer of bad news here, but it seems that Walter Frederick Morrison, who is the man who invented the Frisbee, has passed away. He was at age 90. That was just in this past week. And I know in Santa Cruz there's a disc golf course here, and Frisbee is pretty popular.
Oh, yeah.
Around
I play all
the
time. I used to play all the time. De La Viega.
I used to play all the time, too. Maybe yeah. we should start
We
got to
get out there and
Alex
play.
Alex plays, too.
We should all go play Frisbee golf.
We all don't play Frisbee golf together.
But we
Lindsay,
should.
Do you play Frisbee golf?
I've played a couple times.
To see?
Yeah. Yeah. Hiking with a goal.
What a great toy, though, the Frisbee. I mean, just
it's
think of how many hours as a kid or as an adult you've used the Frisbee and just yeah. like no instructions.
Now, I always heard the Frisbee was named after a pizza place. Is that true? You didn't research this?
I heard it was named after a Popeye character.
Well, so what I had heard, yeah, well, Lindsay, your opinion?
No, it had a different name first. He named it something else, but when the toy company found it and bought it, they renamed it Frisbee.
Ah, okay.
Was
See,
it?
I always
I
thought it was a
called
pizza.
It, he called it, I think, the Pluto platter.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Yes.
So next time we go play Frisbee, we're all going to say we're going to go play some Pluto platter. Pluto
that's a good
platter.
Idea.
Golf. Chris, we just call it disc golf.
Mm. Yeah.
Disc is nice and
90 years
fancy.
Old.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, and I mean, think about it. I mean, how many variations there are now of Frisbees.
Oh, it's
and,
crazy.
I mean, especially with disc golf having gone the way it is, there's just so much subtlety in all these things. But
I love how it was invented. He and his wife used to toss around a pie pan in the kitchen.
Yeah.
That's
and
cool.
It, yeah, see, that's what I thought. It was connected to pans, yeah.
And he actually invented it in 1948, just to wow. give some context to how long it's been around.
That doesn't even seem like a long time for a cool toy like that. It always kind of, it just seems virtual. Like
I can imagine the
there.
World. Imagine the world without a Frisbee. That's just sad.
It would be a terrible place.
Wow. Yeah. At least we have pencils.
It's yeah. like a world without hula hoops.
Which is around the same time, I think.
Yeah, probably.
I think losing frisbees would be much more sad than hula hoops.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. I think that frisbees are a little bit more into our culture.
Pencil, frisbee, hula hoop. That's the name of today's show, by the way. from Monterey, Anna Monis. Hi, welcome to Geek Speak. No, Anonymous from Monterey. What's up?
How does somebody get your cell phone number? I'm not looking for your cell phone number. Sorry.
It's Valentine's Day weekend.
But I'm a geek here in Monterey, and this is a semi-geek because if I was a real geek, I'd know how to find this answer really quickly. If you get your cell phone number changed, how can somebody find your cell phone number if you don't want them to have it? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Specifically, you want to protect your cell phone knowledge from being public knowledge, right?
Yes.
Okay. We will.
And I'm gonna take my answer off the air if you don't mind.
You don't want to use your cell phone. I understand. All right. Thank you. Thanks
for tracing
call.
This call.
I'm on the cell phone right now. Yes.
What's your number? All right. Thanks.
Thanks a lot, guys.
We'll try to address that right now. So, what do you think? How do you not get your cell phone number out there? First off, numbers are not that unique, and meaning that the prefix exists and the last four digits are just, you know, there's only 1,000 of them. Actually, a little bit less. Because some of the numbers are actually reserved. So how do you make sure that they don't get called? Well, you can get called. That's first off by mistaking such. But I'm assuming what she's talking about is if someone knows Anna Monis and they want to, what's Anna Monis' cell phone number? They might be able to look it up. And I don't think that's the case. I mean, it'd be pretty safe in that perspective.
Yeah, I think...
You're the security analyst. So
the big thing is our cell phones are a means of people to get a hold of you, and marketing has taken a hold of that as well. I mean, they're always trying to find new ways to get into your face so that, you know, their ad is right there or their product is right in front of you. And so there's a lot of money goes into trying to find ways to get connected to you, and not always legal, because for a lot of things, they're not allowed to call your cell phone.
Right.
You know, it's
not that people know if they're calling a cell phone when they call.
They are supposed to. There are lookup databases that, you know, that telemarketers are
you,
supposed
you
to use.
You can put a number in, and it will tell you if it's a cell phone or not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, to protect yourself from individuals, just don't put your cell phone out there. I mean, for somebody to guess it or find it, I don't think there are many databases that it's publicized on.
No, I don't think it is. But it is, I mean, if you have a large friend network, and some people you want to have your cell phone, some people you don't, it's hard to keep that information private. Because it's common, like I've had, you know, whiteboards in my house before, and I have a pretty public house where I've got people's phone numbers that I want to remember on the whiteboard, and people come to the house that aren't those people, you know, so it's getting information hidden, it is difficult.
Yeah.
I'm thinking it could change your phone number more often.
That's really the key is to, I mean, because your information's out there every time you fill out a form. I mean, now I put my cell phone on there for a lot of things I order. Just because I know if I'm waiting for a package, you know, if I'm at work or, you know, somewhere, I want to be able to have them to be able to get a hold of me. So I use my cell phone a lot.
You know, the
that.
Benefit also on the cell phones, almost all of them do caller ID. So you can kind of know who it is calling before you answer.
Yep.
And just don't answer. Also, have a very generic outgoing message if you want to be private. You know, have the default message. The people that know you, when they call, they'll get that that's your outgoing message. You don't have to say your name. You don't have to use your voice. And so that way, if somebody leaves a message with you and you never respond, you never pick up, it doesn't matter if it's your call, that's your number or not. And that's one way to deal with it. There's also the National Do Not Call Registry, which is something we should talk about if we're talking about phone calls and not calling. It's donotcall.gov is all one word. And it is – the idea behind it is you put your number in that, and then companies are doing marketing have to – make sure you're not in that number before they call.
Or if they're legal.
If they're legal. So if somebody calls you doing a push of some sort and you're in that, you know to hang up the phone. I mean, you know to hang up the phone anyway. And you can actually report them. And I bet on that website you'll be able to find out.
Yeah, there is actually a form you can fill out there that you can file complaints. I've actually done that before because I've had – and these were ironically, I actually had a bunch of calls coming to my work cell phone, my personal cell phone, my house number,
same
all of
thing.
Which were on the DNC list.
Right.
All from Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
Well, that's the interesting thing is that actually political nonprofits can still use the – can still call.
Just as a related note, I just posted on the GeekSpeak News the free cell phone number search page. Literally, there are hundreds of links on this page that go through – or dozens at least, that go through and tell you how to get cell phone numbers.
Right.
There's reverse lookups. There's all different kinds of ways that people can get numbers.
Here's the thing that's kind of nasty about this is that even though it's supposedly private data, there are, I mean, this is information age, and mm-hmm. some agencies need that information.
Yep.
And so they'll sell it and they'll buy it and it's out there. Yep. That's, but yeah, that's the thing that's kind of sad.
And there's, I mean,
another
the
thing you could do is get a phone and don't put your name, never associate your name with the phone. That's one way to do it. You could buy one of those prepaid phones or, you know, use a fake name when you set up your phone.
Could you buy another phone line that's a forwarder? And
you could use something like Google Voice. So that's that would be a recommendation. I'd have Google Voice is free. You can get a phone number from Google, and all you need is an email address. And you might actually, but you might need to have a credit card as well. But I think that you that pattern you could probably do in such a way that to be completely anonymous to some degree. Like you could go buy one of those prepaid credit cards where you actually just put cash on the credit card. Then you go up to Google's site, sign up for a new email address, putting information in. Then you put in that credit card information using a fake name the whole time. And now you've got a phone number that's associated with a name that's not yours. And then you hand that out to everybody. And then Google Voice can actually call a different number and connect you, and it will be free to do that. So that's an option.
Yeah, though the difficulty is you still have your cell phone if you have rotating numbers. I mean, you have to deal with that, and they still get a hold of you because it's still your phone no matter whether the number is changed.
Hey, if you know of another feature, another service that's similar to this, connect to protect somebody from being discovered via cell phones, let us know. We're not the experts. The world is the expert. Well, let's go on to SoCal. I was just in SoCal yesterday. Don, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hello.
Hello, Don. Welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi. Thanks. Hi.
You're on air. What's your question?
I have an IBM ThinkPad that I beat up really badly because I renovate houses, and so.
Hammers are better for driving nails than laptops.
ThinkPads work.
ThinkPads do work. Yeah. They're thick.
The smaller nails.
I mean, look, Lindsay's got a ThinkPad right there. I could drive a nail with that, no problem.
Yeah.
So the problem is that the weakest spot on the laptop is kind of the bottom part of the screen. So I wouldn't use that part. Now, what happened to your machine?
So my screen, actually, the bottom half of the screen has gone sort of black with, like, lines across it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, is that an easy thing to just sort of switch out with another screen? Is there some way to fix that? It's probably 5 years old.
Mm-hmm. It's probably not worth it to get a replacement screen, because you can probably pick up a machine that's comparable to that without the problem for less than the cost of a replacement screen.
But you might be able to repair it. I might be able to what?
Repair it.
Oh,
so what's probably happening is there's actually a connector on the screen that gives you horizontal and vertical connections to the LCD. And what's happening most likely is the some part of that got a little wet, and the connection points for the horizontal spot of that screen degraded, so they're not connecting anymore. And you might be able to clean them and reconnect them and kind of glue them on. But I'm not saying that I would probably think that would probably be a 30% potential if I did it, because I don't know how to do it really that well.
Hey Lindsay,
and not worth it.
What would you say if somebody had a 5-year-old ThinkPad? Is it time to upgrade?
Yeah. I mean, mine's about 3.5, almost 4 years old, and it is a tank. I love it. I mean, you can do just about anything with it, and it doesn't have an effect on the hard drive. It doesn't skip anything like that. But I'd say it's probably time to get a new one at that point. The amount you'd pay or what you'd invest in frustration and time and trouble trying to fix it yourself, and they're so much cheaper now than they were even when I bought mine.
And the sad news of what we're saying, of course, is throw it away. I mean, that's the thing that's depressing.
Here's the thing. I've got software on there. I've got Photoshop on there because I'm a designer, interior designer, and I use it all the time. And that's really, for me, the cost of getting a new computer. Because
you own that license of Photoshop. You can put that Photoshop copy on
the
machine.
Well, here's the thing. I got this this computer came with me when I left a job.
Ah.
And so the company that I worked for owns the license.
Well, don't tell us your last name, because actually...
Okay.
Is there a migration thing for Windows that you can use? Like, I know Macs, if you have two Macs, you just connect them together and you can migrate. Did you ever hear anything like that, Lindsay?
I haven't heard of anything like that.
No, we don't do it that way, at least, right? I mean, but here's the thing is, you should be able to get the upgrade license and still use that, but maybe not.
You need the license key of the original.
But can you get the license key of the original from that?
I mean,
I might be able to, actually, now that you mentioned that.
I get that, and at some point you will need to get a new computer.
Okay. All right, I was just hoping there was some magic fix.
Well, the other thing is, don't use this laptop. Plug in an external monitor. I bet it's going to work fine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's what I've been doing.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, good luck.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye. Bye. And just moving east just a little bit, Gail from Aptos. Gail, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Thank you. So I'm a 62-year-old grandma, non-geek, but my daughter bought me a Palm Pilot about 10 years ago, and I've had different, of course, ones since then, and I've really, really loved it. And I just lost my Palm Pilot a couple of months ago, so it's time to figure out something new. And I'm just not sure what to do right now. I know it probably makes sense to go to something that's like a phone. Mm-hmm. And I have Verizon, and I know that they just got, like, I think it's the Palm Pre.
Yeah.
There's only two applications that I really use, and it's the calendar and the contacts. So.
Right.
I don't really need or want anything else.
Yeah, so the calendar and contacts, you could really get any smartphone. What kind of computer do you have?
I have not a Mac.
A Windows machine.
Yeah.
And you're syncing that calendar and such to the Windows machine?
Yeah.
Yeah, so you were able to use Palm's desktop software to run your calendar and your contacts. Yeah. So you're going to have to, I mean, everything's going to change a little bit. Luckily, you started with Palm because pretty much everybody has import features from Palm. I would, and since you have Verizon, I would actually just recommend getting a smartphone through Verizon. And yeah, a Palm Pre smartphone will definitely do what you want. It's a little more expensive.
The Pre is actually a fantastic phone. Half of the, those guys, they just went through and raided Apple and took like half the people that worked on the iPhone, and they're all building the Pre now. And you've got an amazing phone there. I think if you try the Pre, you might actually be surprised, Gail, that it actually will become something that you will use. And I think that if you stick with Palm, you're probably going to have more of a seamless transition. And you don't really want to mess around with changing. I mean, you got used to the way you like it. You want it that way.
And I really think, like, if you take the Palm Pre, get it from Verizon, and you go and connect it to your computer, mm-hmm. it will probably use the same data that's already there.
Yep.
And it's going to be seamless, or it's going to be easier. Then going with something like all the geeks have, which are iPhones. Actually, Alex, you don't have an iPhone, do you?
I've got two of them.
Oh, okay.
Well, Ben has an Android. So
that's right.
We have all sorts of stuff.
We're amazing knowledge base here.
Yeah, but I think that, you know, the Palm Pre is also a fantastic device. Yeah. And
so there you go. There's our recommendation, Gail.
Thank you. Yeah.
Good
luck. Like it.
All right,
take care. I'm happy. Thanks. Bye-bye. Mm-hmm.
And now we have a call from Santa Cruz. Sheila, we're going to talk about pencils. Oh, no, darn it. Frisbees. Hi. What's up?
You want to talk about pencils?
Sure. Hey, are you an artist?
Listen, that would be my third topic. I've had plenty of time to look over this obituary, mm-hmm. and I love the few-minute delay between the phone and the radio. It's cool.
Let me clarify. We broadcast in both a traditional FM analog signal, and we also do a digital signal. And to do the digital, to compress digital, you have to have some time to actually stack up the frames to compress it. So there's a, I think, 9-second delay. And when you call on the phone, you get the board directly. So if you're listening to the board, us talking directly, and the radio, you've got this kind of craziness happening.
It's wonderful.
Yeah.
So, anyway, listen, I just wanted to say for Mr. Morrison that it was the Frisbee Pie Company in Connecticut.
That named
it? And
they
spelled it differently.
Uh-huh.
It was IE, and it was the Yale students used his pie lids. Okay, that was kind of a synergistic thing, because the first one thrown by this Mr. Walter Frederick Morrison was actually a popcorn lid.
Uh-huh.
And when he was 17 on the beach in California. And then he hated the name Frisbee, but it was so popular that he came around.
So what happened? So he had pie pans, and he actually used a pie pan from that pizza place?
Well,
and then,
no, actually, it's pie, not pizza, but pie,
pie.
You know?
Sure.
Like pie,
sorry.
I suppose. Yeah. But no, that name just was kind of a catchy name, and people, I guess, there was sort of a wellspring of popularity of that name, but he had started with this, it was a popcorn pie, a popcorn tin lid in California. And then when he was coming up with his names, I guess the popularity of the thing across the country, you know, on the other side had been, you know, sort of coming up at him. And the names that he was happy with weren't selling as well,
mm-hmm.
is the way it sounds.
All right.
So that was kind of cool.
And all the pie tins just said Frisbee on them, so...
Well, those did, but, you know, he was perfecting it, you know, but I guess it was just a matter of a popular name, you know, that if Yale was using it, it was sort of like it had something, well, you know, it was ready to catch on.
Well, thank you very much
with or
for
without
the
him.
thanks for the update and information on that.
Yeah, no, I had a question because I had time you were doing about the identity stuff. All right, so question, my daughter said to me, if there's a survey at the beginning of an offer on the computer, then it's bogus. Here's the deal. I looked up Amtrak yesterday for schedule. First thing that came up was a deal for free Amtrak gift certificate, but you fill out a survey first. Give up all your information. When I say all, not bank account numbers, but your email, your name, your address, and all that. And I filled out that first page, and then the queasiness hit, and I just canceled out. But have they already got it if you filled out one page?
I think the key word is free there.
Yeah. Did you push out next on it? Did you push a form button? Or you just filled it in, and then before pushing a submit button?
It wasn't done. With that page, you would be going on to look at merchandise and stuff. That wasn't the end. That wasn't the submit page.
What I'm asking is, did your browser leak? Did you go to a place where you no longer saw the information that you'd entered?
Let me see. No, I think I got kind of, I may have gone one screen past it. Okay. Is that the fatal flaw?
That's the fatal flaw, yeah. As soon as you go one screen past. Now, Alex and I could probably code a page where as you filled the form in, it was actually submitting the entire time transparent to you and you wouldn't even know. But really the way most people do it is you fill in information and then there's a button that says submit or next. You click that. Once you've done that, they have a copy of it. Now, whether they're keeping that or not, it's possible they're not keeping that because you didn't continue the process.
Right.
Maybe you didn't sign the legal doc or check the legal document. Therefore, it might be erased. But the way information is, it's cheaper for them to keep it than to erase it.
Right. So, let me ask you this then. To look them up, do you just go to Snopes, or Snopes more about bogus information?
It wouldn't be this was at Amtrak?
It was actually SHC. It's not at Amtrak. It just offered a $500 gift certificate for Amtrak.
You know, look them up online and call them up and see if you get a phone number.
Okay.
And, you could definitely do that. The other thing is they can buy your information as well. So whether you gave it to them or they bought it, I don't know how.
Oh, yeah. I'm not as, you know, don't have so much to lose as far as, you know, I mean, we all do, but the thing is, you should never do it that way, right? You should scope them out before you sign.
Yeah, you probably should.
It's good to know who they were.
What's your favorite search engine for a Better Business Bureau?
There isn't. I just don't give information to companies unless there's really a reason for me to do that. And if it's, you know, they're going to enter me into a drawing or something, there's no way.
No, they said $500 free Amtrak gift certificate if you look at all these offers.
Well, just think about it from this perspective. That's $500. They're not giving you $500 for free.
Nobody's going to give you $500.
Your information's worth probably more like $33. So if it's something like that kind of level, then they're probably being up and up. If it's something ridiculously large like that, there's going to be a giant hurdle for you. So there you go.
Right. Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye. Well, we had a lot of things we didn't cover today. And I think we got to post them online because it's just too crazy. But I appreciate the geeks. Thanks for being here. We're going to be doing Al's USB of the Week in just a minute. First, I wanted to mention, though, before we do that, that GeekSpeak on QSP is supported by Whole Foods Market, offering whole trade roses this Valentine's Day. The roses are ethically grown with care given to both the workers and the environment. Whole Foods Market in Santa Cruz, Monterey, and in Capitola across from the Capitola Mall. GeekSpeak on KSP is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. My name is Lyle Troxel. The Geeks today were Lindsay, Lonnie, and Alex Leas, and also Al Luckow. My name is Lyle Troxel. GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used with permission. Yeah, that's what it is. With permission.
I know there's a lot of men out there. Men who want power. Who want control. Who want to be masters of their own destiny. Hi, this is Al Luckow here with GeekSpeak's crazy USB device of the week. Now, this isn't a device for girly men. So if you're one of those, you can go back to picking flowers. If you're like me and you feel your computer is not tough looking enough, or if you bought one of those white Macs, you'll be glad to know there's still a way to beef it up. I'm, of course, talking about the Hand Grenade USB flash drive. Yes, it's a 4-gig USB flash drive in the shape of a hand grenade. It comes in 4 colors, orange, white, blue, and black. If you have to ask me what color to get, like I said, maybe you should go back to picking flowers. As for me, I have one in my drive right now. Clips in easily enough. Also slides out with ease, just like this.